Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
Good morning. So how many people got their penny when they came in? All right. So you got to fill your name out, and right at the top says, I, your name, have been blessed with prosperity beyond measure. I make this statement daily. It's a powerful, powerful statement. And again, you know, it's more than just money, right? Yeah. Pam and I have been noticing a lot of divine order in our lives lately. That's a form of prosperity. So for our internet group, I just always like to say for the first few weeks that we are in our new space here at 2614 Ken Hill Drive, so please come and join us. So, you know, today we're going to continue with this idea of understanding how to expand into this next level of consciousness. And, you know, as you know, when I do studies, I follow Dr. Carl Jung's idea of circumambulation, which means you look at the same concept from many different angles. And this idea of moving from ego to spirit is one of the most challenging ones for us. And the reason why is, as I said before, the ego can't jump out of the ego. The ego doesn't know how to be anything other than what it is. And I have a tendency to sometimes wake up at, you know, like 2 o'clock in the morning or something, can't go back to sleep and don't want to get out of bed because it's freezing. You know, we keep our temperature down. So I go and get my iPad and put it on a low light so it doesn't wake Pam up and sit in the bed and read. And hon, I'm gonna have to get something put on my head because my head got cold last night. Right? Yeah, you have something like that. Right? But anyway, in the reading last night, this author was really explaining this idea of ego in a very interesting way. He says, for us, ego is like we're in a room where we've shut the door. We've locked the door. And in that room, we have all of our joys and loves and all the things we love about ourselves and life and what we're doing. But we also all have our fears and our unforgiveness and our prejudices and our, you know, hatred and anger and all the stuff that has happened in our lives is all in this room. Meditation, prayer and meditation, the purpose of it is to give us the courage to open the door and come out of the room. Isn't that powerful? And so, like he was saying, he says, you're never really going to give up your room. As you evolve, what will happen is some of the things in there that are not of love, you will get rid of some of those things. But as long as we're in this life experience, we need to have that room that we can go into where we feel familiar in the environment in which we live. But we will get to a place where we will no longer close the door. You get it? So that we can come and go. So that's what Jesus was saying. He says, when you know the truth shall set you free. The freedom is from locking ourselves in that room. Does that make sense? I thought that was really powerful. Explanation of that. So he's saying, you know, you're not going to just destroy the ego, but you're no longer going to be confined and locked into the ego. Okay. So anyway, you know, we're going to continue with that idea in this talk today. And, you know, for many, many years ago, I began the lesson with the words from the song Heaven by the jazz soloist Kim. Anybody familiar with that? Okay. Who's familiar with that? All right. Okay. So, and in that, he says, something is happening to me. The man I used to be is gone. He laid down his life so that I could go on. Isn't that deep? All right? So, you know, and I've listened to that song many times before it really struck me, so what those words were saying. But those words are about the spiritual process. And if you listen to it again, something is happening to me. The man or woman I used to be is gone. He or she laid down his or her life so that I could go on. And this is, again, the essence of the spiritual process, dying to the old so a new self can arise and go on. And I say this many times, it's not a process that's unknown to us. we know about dying to the old and you know, evolving to a new state of consciousness. And, you know, this is the ideal behind the crucifixion resurrection. We're going to be going through that soon. You know, you've heard me say that Jesus overcame, you know, the disciples were an outer manifestation of what Jesus was trying to accomplish within them, right? That's why he kept Peter, John, and James, faith, love, and wisdom with him all the time, because he said, these are the things I really got to work on, faith, love, and wisdom. So he kept Peter, John, and James with him all the time. All the disciples were around, but those are the ones he really connected with. And you heard me say that he overcame all of them, meaning within himself, he activated the power they represent inside of him. The one that he had not quite accomplished yet was Judas, okay, who represents life, okay? So he, you know, but of course, in the end, he did do that. So the crucifixion was, he was diminishing the power and the dominion of the ego, the personal self, so that he could express more as the spiritual self. Is that okay? And of course, we also know about this in, for those who are taking notes, Matthew 9, 14, Mark 2, 18, and Luke 5, 33 is where we hear, you cannot put new wine into old wineskins. Okay? You cannot put this new mind into the old mind, right? So, you know, this is the dilemma of the spiritual transformation process that we are being challenged by, is that, you know, I cannot, you know, I hear these ideas, but I can't accept them in the mind that I'm in. And I have to let them lift me and evolve me to another state of consciousness. And then I shared in a lesson many, many years ago, because I haven't done this recently, the weekly series Deep Space Nine, right? And in it, what happened, the crew, you know, from their big mothership, they would take these little smaller ships and go out and do exploration. And while they were out, something attached to the ship. And they couldn't figure out what it was while they were out. So they, when they got back to the, you know, the mothership, they began to analyze it. And they found that what had attached itself to the ship was the genesis or the beginning of a new universe. All right? So upon closer examination, they could also see that within this new universe was the genesis of an intelligent species. So not only did you have a new universe evolving, but you had a new species that was evolving as well. Well, the dilemma that the crew had to face was that this new universe was growing at an extremely rapid rate. And if it was allowed to continue within a very short period of time, it would obliterate and replace the existing universe. All right. Now, the captain and the crew were caught in a quandary. Do they destroy the new to save what now exists, or do they allow the new to replace what now exists? Can you hear the analogy? All right. And I know that, you know, you can. There's sort of a biblical analogy in that, that the spiritual process is kind of the same idea. You know, when you begin to awaken from what is called the Adam dream. Does everybody know what I mean by the Adam dream? Okay. You know, Adam put us into a dream that we are separate from God. So when you begin to awaken from the Adam dream, there's a realization that something is happening to me. The way I used to be is fading away, and something different is trying to percolate up inside of me. Okay. And so if you choose to travel through life in prayer and meditation and spiritual contemplation, you will ignite within you the beginning of a new universe that will begin to spread through your old existing universe, overtaking your ego's belief system and replacing it with a new way of seeing, thinking, and believing. Okay? So it's not a process where we can say, I'm going to be different, because we've all said that. And we might be different for a minute, but then we just go back to our old ways. We go back into the room and shut the door. All right, we step out for a minute, and then we like, nah, this doesn't feel good. We go back into the room. All right, so, but the, you know, the idea is that we really can't change ourselves, but through prayer and meditation, we can ignite this idea of a new universe that'll start spreading through our being. All right, and if you continue on the journey, you know, the question we each will be confronted with is, do I allow this new universe, this whole new level of awareness that's trying to unfold within me, to replace my old awareness with all of its fears and beliefs and prejudices and wounds and unforgiving thoughts? Can I, will I, allow who I am be dissolved and replaced by the new awareness? And the thing about the room, the analogy of the ego, you know, this room that we live in, is that we go into that room because everything in it is familiar. You know, you step out for a while and you're out there and you're trying to be brave, but it gets scary trying to be something that's outside of that room. And so we run right back into the room and we shut that door. And remember, you cannot put old into new, all right? So, or you can't put new into old. I should say the old or the new, they can't survive together. As we heard, you cannot serve what? Two masters, okay? So you can't say that, well, I like this spiritual idea. Let me add it to who I am now. You can't do that, all right? One, because one is going to dominate the other, and of course, we're going to go right back to what we've always known. So the process of becoming conscious does require that one realize that something is happening to me, and then have the courage to allow yourself to willingly surrender to the process of inner spiritual transformation. Right? You have to want the transformation to occur. And again, the challenge is, I know who I am right now. I don't really understand fully this idea I'm moving towards. You get what I'm saying? You know, yes, it sounds good. You know, it's, you know, all the spiritual masters talk about it, but I don't fully understand what that really is to exist in that, you know, that of this other level of consciousness. So if prayer, deep surrendering prayer, begins this process, then every time we enter into prayer, we are in effect beginning the creation of a new universe within us. You get it? So when you do that, this new universe begins to germinate. It begins to start moving. But whether or not the new universe survives and overtakes our existing ego-controlled inner world depends on whether or not we have the faith and the courage to be willing to allow it to happen. So as you feel this new dynamic happening, sort of like you're in a situation where you normally would have been resistant, you would have been maybe angry, you would have been, you know, your feelings would have got hurt, but then all of a sudden you realize that's I'm getting ready to go back into the room. You know what I'm saying? Something happened, you go, oh, I didn't like that, let me go back into the room, you know, so I can let my feelings be hurt, so I can be angry. But then you catch yourself and go, but wait a minute. I just became aware of the fact that that's what I do. I'm not going back into that room. I'm going to stay right here and just be. You know, so it is an awareness you have to be conscious of that this is happening. And we can sit around and we can intellectualize about being willing, you know, that we're going to allow this new universe to unfold within us with the effect of significantly changing our present self. We say, oh, you know, we can, yeah, let's have a talk about this. Right, and we're going to do it. That's all what? That's the ego saying, this sounds good, so let's try it. Let's give it a try. And then when it comes right down to it, you have to ask, will I really allow the change to occur? You know, the way I usually respond to life, am I going to do something different? And really not do something different, because we don't know what different is. I'm not going to just think about the fact that that's how I react when life happens, all right? So, and especially when we begin to realize that all of our strong beliefs and opinions, all of our fears and resentments, our pains and our wounds, our unforgiving thoughts, all that is based on fear and negative thinking will be engulfed and swallowed up by this new potential universe that's trying to unfold within me. Now, you know, right away we say, well, what's wrong with that, right? Your intellect says, well, what's wrong with that? You know, if I could get rid of all my fears and all those things that just, you know, cause me to be irritated. You know, but nothing is wrong with that as long as you're okay with letting go of the motivation that draws you into the negative, ego-engaging thoughts and battles that the ego is so fond of. You get what I'm saying? A lot of times the way we react to life, we like the way we react to life. Right? We like looking at the news and talking about what the politicians are doing and what this is happening. We enjoy that. We engage in that. You've heard me say before, the TV is full of talk shows about all the craziness that's going on. You know, and we sit there and we just, you know, we have our tea and cracker and we just enjoy watching it. Okay? So, you know, So you're saying, am I willing to let go of that dynamic? Okay. So, you know, all of this sounds so wonderful, causing you to think, who could rebel against just being peaceful? However, as we all know, we can be drawn into a confrontation dripping with judgment, resentment, and gloom and doom before we even realize that that's what we're doing. Has anybody ever caught themselves? Here I go. You know, and it was triggered, and you jumped right into it. And now, you know, but at least if you caught yourself, then you're beginning to wake up. You get it? Because most people don't even realize that that's what's going on. But if we have the courage and commitment to allow a new universe based on love to unfold within us, we would find it difficult, even unimaginable, to enter into or engage in something that is not grounded in love and compassion and patience and understanding and tolerance. We would be more like in 1 Corinthians 13:4. You know, love is what? Patient. Love is kind. Okay? Now, upon close examination, many of us, even the most prayerful among us, may find that up to this point in our lives, it has not really been our practice to completely surrender to God in prayer. Our ego may have developed an intellectual staging of the practice of surrender. But more often than we can admit, what we still are doing is still a fearful, judgmental ego reaction to life that keeps drawing us back into being judgmental about what is happening in our lives. You know, it's hard to just, you know, I don't want to go through the whole story, but you know, the story of the man who had the son had a horse and the horse ran away. Remember that whole thing? And all the things that kept happening, he just kept going, oh, that's terrible. He goes, I don't really know. It just is. Okay? And so, you know, how do we get to that point when something happens that you would normally go, oh, that's terrible? You just go, I don't really know. You go? Because I'm only looking at a micro of the macro. I'm looking at this small incident and don't know how it's going to affect what is it in the grand scheme of everything. You know, that's sort of the process. So intellectual staging is quite different from spiritual surrender. And most of what we do, because we don't really completely understand spiritual surrender, is intellectual staging. I'm staging being spiritual. You know, it's sort of, well, those of you who've been around here a long time, but I haven't told the story in a long time, way back in Unity of Washington, D.C. days, which is in the 80s, and I would, you know, give Sunday talks, and I wasn't even a licensed teacher back then, but I would give Sunday talks, and, you know, we'd get about 400 or 500 people, and, you know, this lady, I could see her working her way through the crowd, you know, trying to get up to me, and she walked up to me, and she goes, why don't you ever recognize those of us who are highly evolved already? She truly believed that she was already highly evolved, right? But again, the intellect is very good at making us believe that. So we have to be able to determine, am I doing intellectual staging or am I really opening and surrendering to the process, all right? So one who is committed to the prayer, to the life of prayer, persists and insists on remaining open to receiving guidance from within. So that's what happened, is that when stuff happens, and we know stuff is going to happen, remember, this spiritual path is not getting to a place where stuff doesn't happen. As long as we're on this earth, stuff is going to happen, all right? So, but it's when stuff happens, instead of having a reaction, we become still, open, and we listen. And when we hear that guidance, then we move forward. You know, and not only do we hear the guidance, but we will be sharing that guidance through peacefulness, prayerful, loving responses to what is occurring in life. And this is the way of the peaceful warrior, such as St. Francis of Assisi, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, you know, Martin Luther King, all the ones we know who taught us how to approach life peacefully, okay? And each of them lived life with that prayer of St. Francis, Lord, say it with me if you know it, make me an instrument of thy peace. And that can be, that's sort of like your mantra. Stuff happens, and you know, your energy is surging up, and you just calm yourself down and say, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Okay? And these are examples of people who live by power rather than force. All right? Now, the difference between the two is, think of force as coming from reacting to life's challenges from a fearful, forceful ego, all right? Whereas power is coming at life, or responding to life, I should say, with love, compassion, and a strength that can only be gained by prayer. Okay? Now, coming at life forcefully creates an artificial perspective. Right? In other words, it limits our ability to perceive the divine potential that lies within us and within those with whom we're engaged. It creates an artificial perspective when you come at life with force, the force of the ego. The ego says, I can take care of this, doesn't it? Right? I know I can handle this. And so it creates a perspective that's artificial. It's not real. All right. Now, whereas power is real, it's eternal, it's unlimited, it expands our ability to see the divine potential that exists within us and within the situation or people we're dealing with. All right. But the other one, which is artificial, it doesn't give us the ability to see the divine potential that exists there. All it sees is that stuff that stirs us up to want to come at it from a point of fear. And as truth students, we're learning that truth principles demand a new receptacle, a new universe, a new space and consciousness free of existing beliefs and opinions. So the key is, if I'm always going to come out from my old way, I'm going to run back into the room and I'm going to pull off the shelf, this is how I always respond, right? If you're going to do that, even if a new divine idea comes to you, knocks on your door, you're not going to answer. And again, Joseph and Mary, pregnant with the Christ idea, come to the inn, knock on the door, and they say there is no room for, them, because it was crowded already with all the thought people that were inside the inn. Does that make sense? So if your room, your ego room, is filled with all of your own stuff, and the spirit knocks on the door and says, hey, I got a way for you to move through this, you're not even going to answer the door. Or if you do answer the door, you're going to say, well, I'm sorry, I already figured this out. I know exactly what I'm going to do. Right? Isn't that the dynamic? Okay? So it is as if God, the divine principle of love, is saying to us, follow me. To follow me, you must be willing to express love and forgiveness and seek peaceful resolution and pray in every situation. So God said, if you want to follow me, this is the way you follow me. Stuff happens, you enter into prayer. Okay? It is as if when we pray to God, God says, in order for your prayer to be answered, you must allow me to heal you deeply, which means I must give you a new universe, a new consciousness that knows the power of love to heal and overcome your fear. So when we go to God, usually a lot of times when we go in prayer, let me just take this back. Faith and hope is something we've kind of mastered at a certain level, right? We can have faith and we can have hope. Okay, but the key here is we're having faith and hope that this thing that's bothering us can be fixed. When you go to God, God is not going to fix that thing that's bothering you. God is going to fix you so it no longer bothers you. See, there's a whole different perspective. So, and it's not to negate the fact that our intellect has a good command of faith and hope. That's very important. That's a level. Remember, there's physical birth, intellectual birth, and then spiritual birth. Physical birth, we don't really remember how that happened. Well, we know how it happened, but we just, here we are, right? Intellectual birth, we kind of had some involvement in that, where we studied, we did the things we needed to do to grow intellectually, but it was sort of a natural process for us. But spiritual growth is a whole nother decision process. It's a whole nother dynamic, okay, to move beyond. So like I said, intellectually, yes, we got faith and hope down pat. As a human race, we have faith and hope down pat. But we no longer want to be, we want to evolve to a place, the next level, where it's not changing the thing, but changing my perspective of the thing. So remember, artificial perspective, right? It's maybe a fact, but it is not always what? The truth, all right? However, some of us maybe like the senior officer on the Deep Space Nine in Deep Space Nine scenario. She couldn't understand the dilemma. She said, well, you know, destroying this new universe and this civilization at the stage of development that they're at right now would be like stepping on ants. Why don't we just squash them and be done with it? Now, remember, this is a universe that's trying to overtake the existing universe. And she's saying, well, we got to save ourselves. Let's just squash that thing and be done with it, destroy it. Okay? Now, as truth students, we face the same dilemma. Do we accept the new universe and its inhabitants of love and compassion and forgiveness and patience and peacefulness, or do we step on it and squash it like ants so we can remain as we are? That's the dilemma we're going through all the time. We weren't conscious of that fact that we were doing that, but that's what we were doing. When, you know, when something happened, that now that we are more awake, we'll say, well, I could come at this lovingly, but that's the kind of a new thing that's rising up in me, right? Or I could squash that and just do what I normally do. Is that, I just want you to understand the practical application of this process. So we're examining the possibility that we are ready for a new higher level of understanding of the nature and purpose of prayer meditation and how it can lead to a greater spiritual awareness. We are exploring the possibility that when we pray, we are in essence asking for a new understanding of our true unlimited potential. So it's sort of like, again, when, you know, God said to Solomon, you can have anything you want. And Solomon said what? Give me what? Wisdom. Because if I have wisdom, right, then the universe is mine. Okay? So and that's why Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom, the wisdom, the higher consciousness, and then all that stuff you say you want, it'll be yours. And not only will it be yours, but if it comes to you and somehow it goes away, you don't really care because you have the consciousness that created it in the first place. Does that make sense? Okay? So the events that are occurring in the world today, are presenting us with a clear sign that we can no longer haphazardly walk the spiritual path. We can no longer casually spend time in prayer meditation every now and then. Okay? The events of the world are demanding a new commitment to a life of prayer, love, and compassion to help us overcome the world. All right? And as Jesus said in John 16:33, I've told you these things so that in me you will have peace. In the world, you will have trial and tribulation, but take heart, for I have overcome the world. And so that's the process. The world is going to keep being the world. And again, you know, I bring these things up every now and then so we continue keeping them in the forefront of our mind. But Greg Braden, a scientist, remember, did this scientific experiment in Washington, D.C., in terms of if a group of us prayed for peace in Washington, D.C., would the crime rate go down? And the police chief was involved in it, and they could see the crime rate go down as this group of people held a prayer vigil, right? He discovered that if the square root of the population is praying, it'll affect the entire population. And we can become part of the square root, right? That's the idea. So it's not, yes, the marching and all those things, you know, to bring attention is good. But when the marching stops, you still have to maintain the prayer mentality that will cause the overall effect, okay? And the effect will happen from the inside out. It's because your soul is calling to the soul of others. And I don't care what that person looks like in terms of what they're presenting on the outside. When their soul is affected, they've got to change. All right. So that, you know, that's the idea. So to repeat, for the purpose of this study, we're viewing prayer as asking for the emergence of a new understanding and a new awareness, a new inner universe to replace our existing consciousness. And the more time we spend in prayer, meditation, and spiritual contemplation, where our purpose is to know God and to give God the freedom to transform us, transform our heart and our mind into something that is more open and loving, you know, that's a process that's going to take some time. So to pray for divine connection is to spark the possibility of a new understanding, a new genesis, and a new consciousness. So when I pray, And women, I'm not praying, say, Lord, boy, I need me a new suit. Or I need, you know, we're not praying those kind of prayers. Or can you fix this? Or, you know, what it, the prayer is to make the connection, to make the divine connection. Because if you make the connection, then you will be given a solution and a way of movement that is beyond what your intellect could ever have thought of. Does that make sense? Okay? So it's important to understand that when we resist, oppose, or try to block the expansion of ourselves, of our, you know, greater awareness unfolding, when we do that, when we say, no, I'm going to be just like I am. I got to respond to this way, I always respond to it. When you do that, you're stepping on that new universe that's trying to unfold. You're blocking it. You're saying, no, I don't want that. I want to do what I always do. Okay? My will, not thine be done. As opposed to what? Thy will, not mine be done. And I realize that this may be, you know, this may not be so much of a conscious process all the time. You know, we may not always be consciously aware that that we're stepping on this new universe that's trying to unfold inside of us, right? I mean, you know, we just do what we do. The ego does what it does. We respond to life the way we respond to life. And we don't understand that when we're doing that, we're stepping on this new dynamic that's trying to unfold within us. So, but the key to lessons like this and studies like this is for us to become aware that the process is unfolding, all right? Now, the whole spiritual evolutionary journey is about self-examination. Now, it's another process level to this. Remember I always says self-observation, say it with me, without condemnation. That's the self looking at what's going on inside of you and going, well, there I go. I'm doing it again. Or here I am, or you know what I'm saying? It's the self looking at the self. Not so much condemning it, but it's very aware of it, you know, but it has some kind of emotional involvement to it. It's hard to do it without condemning. You with me? So the next level beyond that is to move to the level of witness. The witness is a higher consciousness within you that sees what's going on and has no response to it whatsoever. None. It only sees what's going on. Does everybody follow me? Okay? So if you are doing self-observation, so supposedly without condemnation, but because it's the ego doing the observing, it's hard not to have some emotional attachment to what is happening, to what you're doing, right? The next level above that is the witness. And you can't just say, okay, I'm going to use a witness now. I ain't using, all right? It doesn't happen just like that. First is being aware that the witness exists within you, okay? And if you want to call the witness a Christ or whatever, that witness exists within you. Remember, God does not condemn us at all. The eyes of God are too pure to behold iniquity. So when you say, oh, God, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean to do that. If God was an anthropomorphic being, and God would just go, huh? All right? So God does not judge at all. So that witness is at that higher level within us, all right? And the key to the process is that the witness can judge, look, truly look without judging, but the ego will become aware that the witness is watching it. And the ego does not like to be watched, okay? And that in itself will cause it to begin to shrink. So it's about coming to a new understanding of the true purpose behind this spiritual process and the true purpose of prayer, that the crew, you know, was showing the truism of how the human process unfolds. I don't understand it. We got to destroy it. If I don't understand it, I got to block it. I don't want to hear this. All right? That's not where we are. Okay? And I got a little bit more to go. You guys with me still? Okay. All right. So quite often we become aware of a new spiritual principle and ideals that are just beyond what the intellect can grasp. And so we respond to them with skepticism. The key we want to get to is hearing new profound information and just hearing it. Not judging it, not saying, do I understand it? None of that, okay? Some of the studies I'm doing right now are just, I read them and I go, I don't get it, all right? My brother called me the other night and he was we were talking, and I told him what I was studying. He said, well, send that to me. I said, well, Bruce, he'd send me the contact. I said, I'll send it to you. But this is not just easy reading. He said, well, I got a lot of time on my hands right now, so I got time to just read it. Because you have to read it and then go away from it and come back and read it again. But the key is to get to a place when you hear or discover new information like that, don't judge it. Just read it. Because there is something inside of you that already knows it, right? And so what it's doing is pushing, instead of you trying to bring your intellect to a space where it understands it, this is pushing you up beyond intellect to that place in you that already knows its information. Because it was written by other mystics. You get what I'm saying? It was written by a mystic. And that mystic received that spiritual information. And so now it's in the consciousness of the human experience. And so you just want to let yourself be lifted up to it. And that's why Jesus said in John 4:10, if you only knew the gift of God, if you only knew what I was trying to give you. Because the disciples always pulled him to the side and says, Lord, that was a really good talk you gave, but I don't understand a word you said. And so he would have to take them into a room and try to break it down for them. All right. So I say again, the whole spiritual evolutionary journey is about self-examination. We must be willing to look in the mirror clearly and ask ourselves, am I willing to allow the birth and expansion of a new universe, a new understanding to enter my mind, body, and spirit? Simply, the words of gospel, am I willing to be born anew? That's why, now we begin to understand, because we heard that all our Christian lives, right? You must be born again. Okay, so we go and we get baptized, we come out and say, dry off, and we go, all right, I'm born again. And that was just a ritualistic process, right? It was only the beginning. Okay, so, and in our emotional confusion, we see reflections, listen carefully, we see reflections of the mirror of our mind that are mere riddles to us, causing to ask, what is this really all about? Have you ever felt an anger or an emotion or a sense of unforgiveness or something inside of you and ask yourself, what is that really all about? What is that? Any of the psychology people in the room, that within the first 7 years of the chat of our lives, that we, what happens to us kind of takes us through the rest of our life?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, all right. So some of the things that happen to us happen really early, and we don't remember them. But remember, because they're in the unconscious, subconscious realm of mind, they're still organic, and they're still affecting our behavior. So we look in the mirror and go, what is this really all about? Okay? And so, I believe that, much of the problem of prayer, the prayer process is for us to, to solve these puzzles of this reflection that we have ourselves. And a lot of times a reflection we have ourselves is a poor reflection. All right? We look in the mirror and we go, I don't really like what I see. I don't like what I feel. Okay? And that's because, again, remember, those are artificial perspectives. It's not the truth. So now when you look in the mirror and you go, I don't really like what I see. But you can say to yourself, but that's an artificial perspective. There's a greater me in here somewhere, and that's what I'm trying to get to. Okay, we're like I know you've heard this story. We're like the baby eagle. Somehow the eagle's egg fell among the chickens. And so the chickens hatched the egg. And so the eagle comes out, and he scratches and pecks at the ground, with all the other chickens, even though he had the ability to fly at great heights, but because he was with other chickens, he did what chickens do, all right? And that, I hate to say it, but many of us, we are eagles, but we're pecking and scratching at the ground when all of our lives we have the ability to soar at greater heights. And I'm not talking about soar at greater intellectual heights, because most all of us in the room have done that. I'm talking about soaring to greater spiritual heights. Okay. Transformation cannot take place within us until we're ready to surrender and become willing to accept a new awareness until we become willing to be born anew. So I'm going to end this with a paraphrase of the statement written in Isaiah 62:2. When you allow this new consciousness to unfold within, everyone will see your righteousness and be blinded by your glory. And you will be given a new name by the mouth of God, and the Lord will hold you in his hand for all to see, a splendid crown in the hand of God. Never again will you be called desolate or forsaken. Your new name will be the one in whom God is well pleased. Amen.